With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Hello and welcome to So I Got to Thinking, the weekly Sex and the City podcast where we take the timeless questions of Carrie Bradshaw and apply them to modern life and love. You're joined by Waxy Hanrahan and her chocolate obsidian, Juno Dawson and Dylan B. Jones. Hi, Dylan.
Hi, Juno.
How are you?
Good. In case listeners were wondering and weren't as eagle-eared, those very obscure nicknames are in reference to Bunny McDougal's Orchid competitor.
if our listeners don't know who Waxy Hanrahan is,
then stop listening. We to can't. This
you're not truly a fan. You know what you call yourself a fan? My gosh. Oh, Dylan. This week we are traveling to Suffern, New York.
Yes.
You know I don't like it when they leave Manhattan, but let's dive in anyway. Can you give us a potted synopsis?
Yes. So as you've just said, Carrie has to go out into the sticks to see Aiden's cabin in the woods, which she's really pissed off about, but she goes anyway.
Mm-hmm.
Samantha keeps having guys ask her what she's doing at the weekend, which
she hates.
Which I can actually, like, I know it was supposed to be like the ridiculous storyline, but I was like, I get it. Charlotte is ovulating,
mm-hmm.
And her and Trey visit Bunny's, I guess, country house. Or is it, but does Bunny live in Connecticut?
I suspect they just have a family compound in Connecticut, yeah.
Yeah, the compound, yeah, the mm-hmm. Connecticut compound. And then, yeah, Miranda and Steve finds out he has testicular cancer, and it kind of brings him and Miranda back together in, like, a really nice friendship kind of way.
Indeed, yes.
Yeah.
So yeah, we have been watching season 4, episode 9. I believe it was called Sex in the Country.
Yeah.
Is that right?
Sex in the Country.
Sex in the Country. What did you make of Aiden's cabin in the woods?
I mean, I don't know. Well, firstly, I thought he was quite... I didn't particularly like him in this episode. Like, he informed Carrie that she was going. And when she, like, tried to kind of make an excuse, he was like, no, but you can do your work now, or blah, blah, blah. And it's kind of like, take the hint. If you can tell your partner doesn't feel like it, don't kind of, like, coerce them into it, I think.
I'm going to let Aiden Shaw off the hook on this one. I am reading between the lines. I don't think this is the first time he's invited Carrie to his cabin and Carrie has found a bullshit excuse to get out of going.
Okay,
And I think he has slightly forced the issue because he knows, left to her own devices, Carrie is never, ever going to come and see his pride and joy. Why? Because Carrie's a bit of a dick. And actually, this cottage is... although it's amazing, because Aiden seems to spend an awful lot of time with Carrie, so fuck only knows when he has done up this cabin. Presumably, somewhere between opening a bar with Steve, getting back together with Carrie, running a furniture shop, he has also managed to renovate a country hut.
Yeah.
What an amazing time-turner power he must have.
And it kind of got me wondering, how much, I imagine it's like, firstly it got me thinking, like, how much money does Aiden have?
Because mm-hmm.
it's interesting, that's an interesting disparity, not disparity, like, difference, I guess, between him and Big. Big obviously has lots of money. We don't really know how much. I imagine, like, Carrie and Aiden are supposed to be kind of on a par, perhaps.
With
each other.
No, I think so. If Aiden owns a store in Manhattan,
he's not
doing bad somewhere, is he? And I think I might be getting ahead of myself, but I think later when it comes to Carrie buying her apartment, Aiden mentions he already owns real estate.
See,
he's just obviously done well for himself as a furniture designer of oppressive wood. He's done really well. I think it's really interesting. I think what I've learned from COVID, one of the many things I've learned from COVID, is that everyone in New York spends all their time trying to get out of New York. I think that is accurate. I think a lot of New Yorkers or Brooklynites don't like spending their weekends in the city. And, you know, I'm friends with the author Tori Peters, who wrote Detransition Baby. And she
love.
She and her partner are at the moment building their own cabin in the woods. And I mean, it looks very natural. Plus, you know, they're always showering in waterfalls. And I'm kind of
I've seen on her Instagram actually. And she has a pair of dungarees, not unlike Carrie, actually, I think.
She does, apparently this is what New Yorkers do. They spend their weekends building rustic getaways. I would rather die. It's really not my time.
Yeah, me neither. Do you think it's because perhaps New York is, and New York listeners can correct us if we're wrong, perhaps New York is more oppressive than like other cities like London or Berlin in the summer because it's a lot more condensed?
Mm-hmm. And the heat as well. Don't forget, we rarely get heat in London like they get heat. I was once in Manhattan in June, and fuck me, it was hot.
Yeah.
And kind of where I live, you know, in Brighton, there's always that lovely breeze coming off the sea anyway. But it was a different kind of hot. It really did feel like heat was being bounced off the walls of those buildings in Manhattan. So I can understand why New Yorkers want to flee to the Hamptons or into a forest just to breathe some cooler air. And it's the thing now. I mean, possibly, you know, at the time in 2002 or whenever this was, 2001, it was hilarious that you would go to a rustic cabin in the woods. But now the idea of the kind of the glamping, it's a massive industry. So I was supposed to, lockdown put a Patriot, but last year Max and I were supposed to be going away to his birthday with a company called Canopy and Stars. And Canopy and Stars are quite a high-end website agency that hook you up with cabins exactly like Aiden's. And I swear to God, 3 nights in a cabin like Aiden's will set you back about 800 quid. So as much as a week in Greece or Spain or Ibiza.
Wow.
You know, and I'm not exaggerating. 3 nights in a luxury cabin in the woods is about £1,000. And I know this because I've tried to rebook for his next birthday. And I'm like, fuck that shit, we'll go to Berlin. Staying in a fucking shed in Wiltshire for £1,000, you on crack, what?
What do you think about, are you an outdoors, do you like that sort of thing? Cabins, camping?
What do you think, Dylan?
As I was saying it, I was like, I know what the answer to this is.
No, I just don't. In a world with hotels, I do not understand the appeal of camping. So, look, you know, this get back to nature and look up at the stars. Just look up at night. You can see them. They're just in the sky. They're in the sky above cities as well, guys.
Also, we live on a rock in the North Atlantic Ocean. Mm-hmm. I don't understand why camping is so popular in a country where, like, the weather is constantly bad and the temperature drops to, like, sometimes below freezing at night. I don't get it.
including rich people. Some of my friends who have actual money opt to sleep in fabric huts rather than go to a pleasing bed and breakfast. Now, don't get me wrong, I love a pleasing bed and breakfast in the countryside. The Lake District is absolutely my go-to. I love it there. I feel very tranquil when I'm in the Lake District. But I don't want to stay in a fucking pillowcase, which is essentially what a tent is, a waxy sheet. You know, it's just not a thing.
So, do you scream? No. Do you ear-splitting screams when you see squirrels?
No, I do not do. I think squirrels are vermin. I think Kerry's quite right there. I think they are fancy rats. I'm with her on that one. But no, I wouldn't shriek.
That scream, like, I've always remembered that scream because it's just so much. Like, it's such a scream.
Kerry is so much this whole episode. She's... yeah. Again, this is why I don't like these two episodes. I think, because they're a little double bill, they almost teeter into a slightly different sitcom with falling over and sliding around in mud and quite crudely drawn characters like the farmer, although we'll get to him in a minute.
Yeah, I thought that was very, that montage where she's, I thought SJP was great in the scene,
yeah.
But the montage where like she's picking up the piece of wood and keeps falling over, I was like, I feel like I'm watching a different show.
Mm,
like
totally.
this is not, and it wasn't just because they were in a different setting. I was like, this is not how they, no, like this isn't how Sex and the City does things. This is weird.
So, I mean, in the grand scheme of, you know, Juno, she's a storyteller. And you'd file this under, it's a fish out of water story. So we've taken Kerry, the city fish, and we're putting her in a new environ to see how she sinks or swims. We did this last season where we took her to LA as well at the same time to see what she will do in a different scenario. And we give her different background music and she, like Harry always does, she plays the part in that she changes her hair and she wears her little dungarees and she tries to adapt.
But not fails, but just doesn't. I mean, it's very clear that like...
Ooh, she gets right on my tits more than anything. She presses down on my very last nerve, but carry on.
It's very clear that she is just meant to be in New York. And I think that every so often they like to remind the viewers of that New York is like not just the oxygen for Carrie, but is oxygen for the show.
Which is why it's so perplexing they chose to do a whole film in Abu Dhabi.
Yeah.
That to me is the big mystery of that car crash of a second film.
Yeah.
But Carrie bugs me more than anything in this one. The question she posits is, when does the art of compromise become compromising?
Mm.
You see, I'm with you right from day one, which is actually, if Carrie used her words and said, Aiden, I really love how enthusiastic you are for your cabin. And of course I'll come up and see it. But, you know, it's not properly plumbed in. And for the first time this time, I clocked a fucking portaloo outside as well. So I'm not convinced there's even a flushing toilet. So it's not suitable for me to say that. And you know I will hate it. And why do you want me... You know I'm not going to enjoy it. So why do you want to put me through it, kind of?
Yeah.
So I wish she'd kind of communicated that. Because if Max said to me, shall we go camping? I would say no. Because the compromise is the Airbnb. That's the compromise. Yes, we'll do the thing you want to do, which is go away for a break or go to the countryside. But we need to do it on my terms as well as your terms.
Mm.
And it feels like, yeah, this was all on Aiden's terms. Although, of course, Carrie should express interest in this thing that obviously Aiden is really, really proud of. But what especially bugged me was her being so fucking useless. You know, in a world where Tori Peters and her partner are building a house in the woods, two women constructing a house, why do we need to see a woman incapable of lifting a plank of wood?
Yeah.
You know, really, are we saying, is this what we want to say with this episode? That a woman can't lift a piece of wood.
And, like, has a breakdown when she sees a squirrel.
Exactly. It really boiled my piss. And it's episodes like this where you can really come at it from a feminist point of view and say that actually this show wasn't doing anybody any favours. And the fact that, yeah, both she and Samantha go to the middle of the countryside in heels.
Yeah,
like,
and it
really?
I guess you could say it kind of glamorizes being helpless.
Mm.
And yeah, like it makes it very kind of like, oh, like we should just live in the city and do fabulous things and we don't need to know about any of that silly practical stuff, which is possibly the first taste of the disgusting materialism that Sex and the City ended up in in the second film. Like, I hadn't thought of that actually until you just said it.
It did, yeah. That was particularly on this one. And maybe, you know, it's, you know, like, I've got a couple of friends in Brighton who are women, who are carpenters. And so it's just something about seeing Carrie flail on some, you know, she couldn't, you know, baking a pie, you know, a very gendered activity. So maybe there's something to it, actually. She's quite bad at all kinds of activities in this episode.
Yeah, true, actually.
But it would have just been cool, you know, to see one of them be capable. You know, even if Carrie was helpless, would it have been better for Sam to just sit down at that cow and be like, well, of course Sam knows how to milk a cow. You know, that would have been more surprising and more interesting.
Or it had turned out that she had grown up on a farm, because we don't know anything about her background. Or what would have been even better, possibly, is if the show had been brave enough to make Sam properly bisexual or pansexual, and she had slept with a hot female farmer who was working down the road. That would have been great as well.
Oh yeah, sadly no, but remember that chapter is closed now. There will never be another woman for Samantha. So it did bug me in terms of the art of compromise becoming compromising. I mean, I guess what she's asking is there a point where actually you can veto that rule? I guess, are there boundaries? You know, is there a place where you have to say no?
It's hard to answer, because it's an individual thing, isn't it? It depends on your own limitations or open-mindedness or whatever. Like, everyone has their own point where, like, it's too much compromise. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, that's a bit of a cop-out answer, but, like, you know what I mean.
Yeah, because it's really, really tricky, because sometimes it's hard to know. Because Max and I, again, speaking just for the two of us, we're not constantly trying to score points and saying, well, I did this, so you need to do this. Sometimes that comes up a little bit, you know, like there was, landing Max in trouble, a couple of weeks ago, he got home late from a night out, and I'd have the car for work that day. And he did summon the fact he's picked me up at Worthing train station more times than I can count in the middle of the night. And even though I was kind of sick, I was full of cold, I was kind of sick and it was really late and I'd sort of already gone to bed, if I'm honest. Right. He did say, are you honestly saying you're not going to come and pick me up after all the times I've picked you up? And I was like, for fuck's sake. And of course I literally went to pick him up in my pyjamas. I was like sat outside Worthing station in my pyjamas. You know, because compromise. Yes, yeah. He's picked me up a lot more times than I've picked him up. And so, you know, I'm not keeping a tally of who has compromised more. But I think compromise can become compromising if it's one partner doing all the compromising every time. And I also think you just have to know your limits. And I think you as an individual know your limits. And then I think what's really encouraging in a relationship is when your partner knows your limits without even having to ask.
Yeah.
Max, and I say this really confidently, he's never going to ask me to go camping because I've made my feelings on it quite clear. And also he knows me, and he knows there's really valid reasons for me not being able to camp. And that's because of my IBS problem. I need to be near a toilet all the time. You know, I have to for my health. So it's kind of, you know, and Max knows that, and so he isn't going to attempt to take me somewhere that doesn't have plumbing, you know, kind of.
Yeah.
So it's things like that, and then those kind of hallmarks of a good relationship, and maybe that's what this episode is. Maybe it's part of a bigger story, which is how well-suited are Aidan and Carrie. You know, he's a little country mouse, and she's a city rat, as is pointed out at the end. He's a squirrel. I love that he leaves his nuts out for the squirrel to try and entice woodland creatures like some sort of tall, handsome Snow White.
You would have thought that Chris would be, in this situation, that Chris would be the Aidan and I'd be the Carrie, but actually it's the other way around, because Chris grew up in London and I grew up in Devon. So Chris hates the countryside. Well, doesn't hate it. He really likes the countryside, but his knowledge of the countryside is very limited. I remember he once famously referred to a seagull as a type of, he said, oh, isn't a seagull a type of flying duck?
And well, just,
There's just so much that's wrong about that sentence. Like, firstly, ducks can fly. So
some sort of flying duck. God, there's a lot to unpack with that, isn't there? I was surprised a few weeks back when you went on your little Scottish vacay and you looked very at one with your wood chopping. I was like,
Yeah, I grew up in the middle of nowhere in Suffern, Devon.
Wow, yeah. Who knew? You're right. I would have assumed Chris might be more at home in nature, but so there you are.
But having said that, I've lived in the city for a long time now, and I do enjoy being in the country, but after a week, I just get desperate for, like, 4G and racial diversity. And I'm just like, please get me back to London immediately. I learned in Scotland, actually, that Samantha, that you actually shouldn't drink milk directly from a cow.
Of course not. My God, Louis Pasteur has something to say about that. Yeah. So during the ad break, please go get yourself some pasteurized milk. If you're one of the three remaining people in my life who drink dairy milk, and the rest we can all have some sort of oat milk alternative.
I was going to say, what's dairy milk?
What is it? Made from a cow? What the fuck? We'll talk about that. We'll talk about the politics of dairy farming after these short commercials. See you in a sec.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Want to get a chiseled look in the jawline? Sculpt and shape your jawline with added volume from Juvederm Volux XC. Juvederm Volux XC is an injectable gel specifically designed to be robust enough to improve moderate to severe loss of jawline definition. And it is the first and only hyaluronic acid filler approved for the jawline. Add volume to your jawline for a chiseled look with Juvederm Volux XC. For important safety information and to find a licensed specialist, visit Juvederm.com. That's JUVEDERM.com. Not for people with severe allergic reactions, allergies to lidocaine, or the proteins used in Juvederm. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. There's a risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. Talk to a licensed specialist to find out if it's right for you. Visit Juvederm.com. That's JUVEDERM.com.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
Hello and welcome back. So I got to thinking, we're discussing season 4, episode 9, Sex and the Country. Shall we talk about Miranda and Steve? Because I thought this plot was rather lovely, actually. And the scene in the park where Miranda makes him cry. Really good. What an amazingly well-acted scene. Yeah. Steve is brilliant. Miranda's brilliant. And she has a point.
She does. I mean, as always, both brilliant. Mm-hmm. And it seems like the writers never struggle with their scenes as well. Sometimes you can see the writers scratching their heads a bit, but never in Miranda and Steve's scenes. And I guess that's a sign of it being like a good... You know, the actors having good chemistry and it being a good storyline. Mm-hmm. I was not mad at Miranda.
No, not at all.
I think he needed it. So she gave him a stern talking to because he didn't seem particularly to have acknowledged exactly how bad testicular cancer, how serious testicular cancer could be.
And was kind of
being a bit blasé about it.
I did. I also love the preceding scene as well, where Miranda assumes Steve wants to talk to her to get back together. She's like, now that Jessica's gone, yeah. he thinks we can just get back together. And then Aiden's like, Steve has testicular cancer. Like, I'm a huge fucking bitch. Yeah. Oh, dear. So, no, it was rather lovely. And yes, she. I don't know what it's got to do with compromise or being compromised, but yes, it was. Again, clearly, it was always part of the plan that this season, Steve and Miranda would get back together. I wonder at what point.
I was just thinking. I can't remember. I think it is. Is it even this season?
So yeah. So her pregnancy was written into the show. I think because she was pregnant. But then it's. So I wonder, we need to start, maybe we'll start watching Cynthia Nixon to see if she's always carrying around an enormous bag of shopping.
Oh, yeah.
I think, I'm fairly certain that her pregnancy was written in. So spoilers, kids, this is about to get pregnant.
Or if she suddenly starts wearing sort of very loose-fitting clothes.
Yeah, sort of Monica in season 10 of Friends, which is like, clearly pregnant. Yeah. So we'll have to keep an eye on Miranda's waist. But, It was always clearly part of the plan that Steve and Miranda would at least sleep together and make a baby this season. So it was always there, you know, from bringing Scout and having them go to Steve's bar, and just the whole plot has been set up to get them back together. And thank goodness, was it you who was telling me that they'd auditioned David Eisenberg for dozens of different roles? And then kind of created the role of Steve for him.
No, that wasn't me. That's a good bit
of trivia,
though. I wonder where
I saw that. Maybe I saw that on YouTube or something. But yes, I was watching it somewhere on the internet that was saying that the casting people at Sex and the City had met him for various other parts.
Interesting.
And then kind of created the role of Steve for him. They felt he suited a bartender. And so they sort of concocted a little special Steve, especially for him. And yeah, his little face when Miranda yells at him. It's a big fucking deal, Steve.
And then she's there for him at the hospital.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So yeah, we'll keep an eye on them next week. When next week we're going to explore Steve's testicles.
Yes.
In more detail. Let's move on to Trey and Charlotte with Waxy Hanrahan's chocolate obsidian. Bunny's back.
Whenever her name gets mentioned, like at the start of the episode, I'm like, yes, she's back again. Mm-hmm. And her ridiculous line this week that we've kind of already referenced was, Waxy Hanrahan's chocolate obsidians will be no match for my rising sons.
Oh, I'm obsessed with the lives of rich people. If you've read any of my novels, Clean Meat Market and Wonderland, you will know that How the Other Half Live is a constant source of inspiration.
Oh, me too. That's probably why we loved White Lotus so much.
Yeah, because I come from a working class family in Bradford. And then, you know, I moved to London in my sort of early 30s. And I lived in Battersea, which is, I always think Battersea is the gateway between rich and poor.
I think yeah.
the most run down or poor, the poor, because there are no poor parts of London, spoiler. Yeah. The less gentrified parts of London are often the sort of the transitional areas near train stations. So that's I lived right near Clapham Junction. I moved there the week after the riots 10 years ago in 2011. And obviously Clapham Junction was one of the areas that experienced rioting. You know, my mum was very fretful of me moving to Clapham. But then of course, Battersea Park is very well to do, the area around Battersea Park, where Adele has a property, among lots of other famous people. And although all of Battersea used to be a slum, but it's now very, very stunning. And then, of course, you just scurry across the Albert Bridge, and look at that, you're in Chelsea. And so, you know, I would sometimes get the 345, or I would walk over to Chelsea, and you're in this other world, you know, Chelsea and Fulham, where there are these people, you know, with nannies. You see these like little children dressed like Lord Fauntleroy with like these nannies who are like French or Thai or Vietnamese, and you know, kind of like just different, a different world, and a world I'd never experienced. And I think I'd seen it on television, you know, these cars, Lamborghinis just driving past you and just, ugh. Yeah, made in Chelsea stuff. And I think made in Chelsea is the tip of an iceberg, kind of. I just think that's why I'm obsessed with Bunny and Trey. I love the idea of old money. You know, people who've never thought about wealth because they've always had it. You know, money is just not a consideration. And even if they are cash poor, they've got so much money tied up in real estate from hundreds of years ago, they're never truly going to be poor because they could just sell one of their houses.
They're never going to, they never have known and never will know the feeling of having your card declined because you've got no money in your account. And not because, like, you've got no money in your account and you have to dip into your savings, because you've got no money. Like, that's it. You had 40 quid and you have to wait until next month to get paid again. You've got to make that 40 quid last until next month.
And the concern of this is, you know, the changing way in that we think about poverty. You know, I've never been poorer than when I was a young primary school teacher. You know, I was living in Brighton, which is one of the most expensive cities in the world.
Yeah.
And technically I had literally a postgraduate qualification in teaching, and I was a public sector worker. I was earning, by anyone's standards, I was earning decent money. But where I was living, I was priced out. I essentially, a public sector worker, couldn't afford to live in the part of the world where I was living.
Yeah.
And my rent was nothing, you know.
Yeah. But
it was still swallowed up. And I'm, at that time, I swear, Versace, I wasn't living lavishly, you know. It was that thing which is, you know, the last week of the month was a real struggle, you know. I didn't have any money. And I think this is why we've got to, in the United Kingdom, or I guess in the USA as well, is kind of evolve our idea of what poverty looks like. Because it doesn't look like the way it did in the Victorian era, where it was like little rag cloth children scurrying in the slums, kind of. Because while that kind of poverty does still exist in the United Kingdom, often sometimes poverty can be hidden as well, you know, and it's young working people who just can't afford to live in our country anymore because the cost of living has become so extraordinary.
Yeah.
Gosh, that was a little... a little political cul-de-sac.
So back to Bunny's orchids.
We'll tax the rich. That's what we should be doing. We should eat Bunny McDougal's chocolate obsidian. That's what we should do.
Tax the rich, but don't write that on a dress and wear it to the Met Gala.
Met Gala. We've moved on, Dylan. We're not recording it live. That would have been a zinger 2 weeks ago.
At the time of recording, this is the day
off. That is some spicy, spicy conversation. 2 days after the Met Gala, we're recording this. Right dress, wrong place. Right sentiment, wrong dress. And so many comments. I've seen every take about her dress. I've seen it.
When I first saw it, I was like, oh my God, fab. And then 2 seconds later, my brain was like, hang on a minute.
Do you know what I think? I've always felt this about slogan t-shirts as well, which is you shouldn't need to spell it out on a t-shirt.
Yes.
Like I always think if you're having to spell it out on a t-shirt, I think something's gone a bit wrong. And of course, there was the now legendary We Should All Be Feminists Dior t-shirt designed by Karl Lagerfeld, a man who notably despised women.
Yeah.
So, you know.
Yeah.
Just fuck it. That's a conversation for another time. But
yeah.
Charlotte wants a baby still. Yes, we're still talking about Trey and Charlotte.
Yeah.
And their desire to start a family. It's tricky. And I'm not going to sort of downplay fertility because it's a real thing. Just this morning, I went for a coffee with one of my friends. She's 35 years old. I'm not going to say who it is, but you know, she's 35 years old. And yeah, she was like, you know, we do want kids. It's that time. We can't wait anymore. And, you know, the longer we leave it, the harder it gets. And already she's having to start thinking about the things she can and can't eat in order to maximize her chances of conceiving.
Wow.
And yeah, that's where Charlotte and Trey are as well. You know, they're tracing her ovulation and trying to best increase their chances. And it's a big deal. You know, we've talked about this a number of times.
Yeah.
You know, if you want kids, and it doesn't happen right away, it just increases. You know, and I've seen this with lots of my cis female friends, you know, the longer it takes to get pregnant, or the longer it takes to carry a child for 9 months, because a lot of my friends in their 30s have gone through miscarriages in the last few years, which I think is something we need to talk about, because I think all of those women felt quite isolated. And it's so common. It happens too often for us not to be talking about it a lot, because I think all of those women have felt like, am I doing something wrong? What could we have done differently? You know, when actually it's not that, which is actually 1 in 5 pregnancies ends in miscarriage. It happens
isn't it telling as well, though, that I didn't know that? I mean, yes, I'm a man, but I have several female friends, all of whom I have all of whom are really open, and I have lots of conversations about this sort of thing with, but still I never hear any conversations about miscarriages. Never.
Yeah, so that 1 in 5, it's a tricky one. Looking now on the internet, the NHS officially says it's 1 in 8, but other sources say it's as much as 1 in 4. So clearly there isn't a global consensus. And this is pregnancies, which makes it a slightly different statistic, because obviously some of these would be very, very early stage, before necessarily the parent even knew they were with child. Should say, if I've just referred to women and mothers, obviously trans men and some non-binary people can get pregnant as well.
Yeah.
Obviously. But yeah, so what I'm saying is that miscarriage is enormously common. And so as much as the Trey and Charlotte stuff feels like it's dragging on a bit, and their fertility stuff lasts for much of the season, it's very real. Maybe the frustrating thing about Trey and Charlotte is that perhaps this whole plot line, because it is somewhat played for laughs, perhaps doesn't quite reflect the heartache of fertility. Now, it will later. Actually, remember, of course, in season 6, again, this is getting way ahead of ourselves, Charlotte miscarries. And we will revisit this conversation in a year when we get to that episode. But that episode really, I think, touches the emotional nerve way better than anything in season 4.
Yeah.
And I'm not sure quite how successfully the Charlotte and Trey storyline examines the heartache of fertility treatment, which is... I've seen so many of my friends go through it now. It's really tough. And it's a feminist issue because, you know, 40 years ago, when women weren't encouraged towards careers in the way that they are now, women statistically would have had children younger. This actually is a bit of a you're wrong about. This is a bit of a debunking, which is actually there wasn't, like, in the sort of the 50s, 60s and 70s, women weren't all having children when they were 21. And actually, it's not as dramatic as you think. But statistically, women are now a little bit older when they start having children. Again, I've just said women when I really mean people who can get pregnant are having babies a little bit older. Because, again, it's when are people meant to do it? You know, if you have left university when you're 21, you've spent an absolute fucking fortune on putting yourself through college with the goal of getting a great career. You know, so then obviously you want to invest a few years in your career. You know, you've got to meet someone, whether or not you get married is neither here nor there. You know, by and large, you want to get to know the person you're going to have babies with. And so before you know it, you are looking at 30, because when else are you meant to do these things? And we do know that as you get older, your fertility decreases. And so, but it's just what does this world want of women?
Yeah.
You know, does it want you to have a career? Does it want you to have children? You know, it just sometimes feels like the patriarchy is lose-lose, is what I'm saying.
Yeah. I mean, I also like, quite apart from the biological clock thing, in terms of being in a good mental space to look after a child, I know that I was a complete mess for most of my 20s as well. So, I mean, yeah, it's about that as well, I guess. Like, I can't think of how you would even begin to decide when would be a good time to have a child, not even accounting for all the pressures that society puts on you as well.
And that's a pressure in itself. Because, I mean, if we say then that there is like this dream window where you would start a family, which is the glorious moment between getting your shit together and being too old to physically reproduce. I mean, that window is basically a skylight. It's so small. Because I'm fully with you. I got Prince, my child substitute, when I was 32. Because at that point, I felt ready to take on a big life-changing responsibility. But I can honestly say there was not a moment before that where I would have been ready. So I sort of got Prince at the first time I felt. And also, like, slightly like my life was lacking responsibility. It felt weird to me that my life was a bit Peter Pan-esque. Like, it was almost like, kind of like, it's, I just intrinsically felt it was time to grow up. And I was 32. And so, yeah, by that point, if I was a cisgender woman, lo and behold, that was about the time that I would have wanted to start thinking about having a biological child as well. So I wish slightly that the Charlotte and Trey storyline examined some of these issues, but maybe I'm overthinking it. It's also hilarious to watch them shagging on top of Bunny's orchids.
Sacrilege, ruining her prize orchid. I felt bad for Bunny, actually.
The bathtub scene was quite creepy. The fact she was
Oh my
not
God.
watching me bathe. Well, she was, Trey.
I belly laughed when Charlotte walked in and Bunny was like, "I was just saying how you remind me so much of myself at your age," just with her fag in her hand, like just looking at her completely nonplussed. I was gonna say, so just going back to Carrie, there's some very strange timing in this episode because she goes and has dinner with Big in the middle of it. And then is back in, and then is back in the country the next morning. And I was like, "How did she go to a steakhouse? And what did she say to Aiden? Was she like, 'Oh, I'm just gonna go and have steak with my ex who I cheated on you with, and then I'll be back.'" Like, it was very strange and
Well,
very
maybe we
sudden.
will. Yeah, we might get some of the answers next week when it's very much Big versus Aiden. They have their celebrity death match.
Big goes to visit, doesn't he? Also, Carrie's skirt. Carrie's green skirt
I think that's a Vivienne Westwood. I think. I seem to remember reading it with the
with
ruffle.
like the tuft. I wondered if that was supposed to be like a squirrel, the
Probably,
tuft at
yes, because Patricia
the
Field is really smart. So, yeah, she probably is being a glamour squirrel. Yeah, I mean, Aiden does say it's 40 minutes by train. So clearly it's. And actually, I once did a tour around the area and I did a bookshop in Connecticut. And actually, it's about a 45-minute drive outside. I think Manhattan's got this thing where, leaving Manhattan is a really big deal. But actually, it is a 10-minute drive from Manhattan to New Jersey. You're in Hoboken within 10 minutes. And in the other direction, it's 10 minutes to Brooklyn. Later on, Miranda's drama at moving to Brooklyn is ridiculous. I mean,
Oh my
yes,
God,
Brooklyn is gentrified, but.
New Yorkers must be in absolute shock when they come to London, because London can be like, some of my friends who still live in Zone 2 in London, like I do, are fucking like 70 minutes away because it's the other side of the city.
Oh my gosh, it's such yeah, London
Is
is so
huge.
much huger than yeah, and just the nice thing about Manhattan as well, it's very well organized into nice, it's like a ladder. It's very easy to use is Manhattan. Let's discuss Samantha and the Farmer briefly. I'm not sure what there is to say other than, I mean, that is a real thing. Do you know that was a real thing in London? I think maybe it's a thing about living in a big city because London is a funny one on a weekend because, especially if you live anywhere near the city, So I'm very intrigued by places like Canary Wharf and Canada Water.
Oh, yeah.
Because they become like ghost towns on a weekend. Yeah,
they've been ghost towns since the start of the pandemic, obviously.
Serves them right. Yeah, that's what capitalism gets you.
In Brighton.
In Brighton, weekends are very chill, you know. And so I lived in Brighton and it was very, very chill. And on a weekend, we would kind of just see each other and maybe get a drink and maybe go chill on the beach. But if it's nice weather, where are you going to be at the weekend? Oh, I'll be on the beach.
Yeah.
Whereas then when I moved to London, I'd be like, what are we doing at the weekend? And like my friends would get diaries out.
Oh, yeah.
Like, oh, yeah, my next free Saturday is in, like, the next 4 weeks. And I was like, oh, why? It's like, oh, well, you know, I'm going to Columbia Flower Market. And then the weekend after that, we're doing this. There's a thing on at the V&A. And I'm like...
That's very... As I'm sure you can guess, that's very me as well. Like, I think I've got 3 things happening this weekend.
Do you know what? Literally nothing. Not a thing. My weekend is complete. I had a really busy weekend last weekend. So I kind of feel like I didn't have a weekend. So yeah, I'm going to watch a load of old shit on Netflix. Can't wait.
Oh, great.
Yeah,
great.
It's going to be wicked. Did you fancy the farmer?
I mean, I wouldn't say no, but he wouldn't be my first cattle out of the cow shit. I was trying to think of like a farming metaphor. my first port of call, my first castle out of the cow shed. I don't know.
It was all a bit daft for me. The dungarees, the hay in his mouth. I'm like,
it was cartoonish.
Yeah, young McDonald.
I'm not sure how I feel about milking a cow being sexualized as well.
Well, because it was dairy farming in particular was one of the things that tipped me into sort of vegetarianism, because it's strange to me that we can get squeamish about killing animals, but all right with kind of repeatedly raping cows, taking their babies away and then drinking their breast milk.
yeah,
what it is, guys. Right. It's literally what it is.
You're right.
The breast milk of raped lady cows.
Oh my God.
So yeah, there's not a lot else I can say. However, I mean, young McDonald, his enterprise looks quite organic. I will say that it doesn't look like the mass farming, you know.
And, true.
And that was when I gave up meat, when I realised we don't farm it in nice ways. You know,
yeah.
there is no way of farming that isn't desperately unpleasant for the animals involved.
Yeah.
And I was like, what are you doing? Stop supporting this. It's just not nice. No, and did you know, I fucking love meat. I can't even like, I'm not one of those people, I just never really liked the texture. I fucking loved the texture, but I just couldn't morally square it anymore, which is, that was why in the end I stopped. I, you know, young McDonald seems to have a slightly kind of a little organization. And so yeah, Samantha milking him. And I can't be mad at the line, is there anything else around here that needs milking?
Because
we all said that? I mean, haven't we all been in that situation where you've milked a cow and then offered to perform the function on a human male?
Yeah, of course. If you haven't been in that situation, you haven't lived.
Exactly.
I just enjoyed it just because it was so Samantha, and she just goes, E-I-E-I-O. Just so stupid.
I mean, it was nice. It was very supportive of Samantha to travel to suffer and with Carrie as well. That was very, very supportive of her.
Yeah.
I wouldn't have done that. Do you want to go camping? No. I don't want to go. And on that, I think we've established one thing really clearly, which is you will never catch me in a tent. And if you see a picture of me in a tent, it's because I've been kidnapped and it's a desperate cry for help. So that would be my message to listeners, which is if you ever, ever see me in a tent, please call the police immediately.
Or it's the VIP lounge at Mighty Hoopla.
Oh, that's different. Yeah, if I'm in a hospitality tent or possibly a marquee, I'm all right. I'm okay. That's don't call the emergency services. Until next time, when we will be watching Bells of the Ball, where we will be joined by our special guest Jake Graff. Do follow us on social media at SIGTT Podcast, and be sure to like and subscribe. Until next time, take care. Bye-bye.
Bye.
How would you like to look 5 years younger? In a clinical study, people that had volume added with Juvederm Voluma XC in the cheeks perceived themselves as looking 5 years younger at 6 months after treatment. Look younger, feel like you. Add volume for lift and contour in the cheeks with Juvederm Voluma XC. Reverse signs of aging by adding volume to smooth laugh lines with Juvederm Volure XC. For important safety information and to find a licensed specialist, visit Juvederm.com. That's Juvederm.com. Not for people with severe allergic reactions, allergies to lidocaine, or the proteins used in Juvederm. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. There's a risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. Talk to a licensed specialist to find out if it's right for you.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.